For CGLO News, I'm Julia Silva. Just Stop Oil, the climate activist group that became famous for throwing soup at a Van Gogh painting and spraying orange paint on the Stonehenge, announced they will disband at the end of April. The UK-based group was launched 2 years ago as a campaign to prove that disruptive strategies are effective in causing change to happen, which they believe has been achieved. Just Stop Oil initially demanded the British government to stop using new oil and gas. In March, the government confirmed that they will no longer issue new licenses to companies for oil and gas explorations. The group plans to restructure with new strategies to continue their fight against rapid global warming, economic collapse, and mass deaths, among others. Just Stop Oil will have one last action in London's Parliament Square on April 26th. On March 28th, a 7.7 magnitude earthquake hit Myanmar, which is the strongest that the country experienced for about a century. It caused huge casualties, including the collapse of ancient and modern buildings and thousands of deaths. As of April 1st, the death toll has reached over 2,700 and is expected to increase for the next few days. More than 4,500 were injured and more than 400 are reported missing. Rescue efforts continue as they attempt to find people stuck under the rubble. Meanwhile, there has been inefficient disaster response as local military conflicts restrict access to struck areas and limited international assistance, particularly with U.S. President Donald Trump defunding the aid group USAID. A new study shows that the U.S. tariffs on pharmaceuticals will likely drive up costs and lead to shortages of Canadian-made drugs. Author of the study, Mina Tadros, who is a drug policy researcher at the University of Toronto, found that accessing essential drugs where the most known or used products are Canadian can become difficult. These include medications for treating HIV infections and preventing seizures. Although trade agreements between the US, Mexico, and Canada exempt imported pharmaceutical products from tariffs, the new round of tariff announcements expected on April 2nd is causing uncertainties. Tadros said that minor shifts in supply chains create shortages because manufacturers cannot quickly meet increased demands, and that these could affect both the US and Canada. For more, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Crying in the pharmacy, you're right, my tears are just for me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. What a show we have today. What a weekend. We had the Montreal Canadiens just heating up at the right time, pretty much clinching a playoff berth. We'll get into that. We'll get into March Madness. What a Final Four that was. Duke and Houston with a classic second half. And the national championship game tonight between Houston and Florida. We'll get into that. We will have to get into that unbelievable performance by the Lakers yesterday against the league-leading Thunder. We will get into that. And also, it is the Masters this week. It is go time. The first major of the year, my opinion, the best major of the year, at Augusta National, tees up on Thursday. A lot of headlines from there. So we will get into it, and we are lucky enough to have Cameron Long, who is a golf, Concordia golf athlete, great golfer himself, follows the PGA Tour every week. Cam, can you hear us, and how you doing?
Hey, Tommy, how's it going?
I'm doing good. How excited are you for Thursday? It is go time. We've had all the tune-up events. We've had the Valspar. We've had the players. We've had all these tournaments. But now it is the major season. It is go time. How do you feel that it is, now that it is Masters Week?
The best week of the year. Kind of signifies the start of the spring and start of the golf season for us in Montreal. So I think any golf lover is just getting ready to sit down and enjoy and watch the tournament.
I just wanted to quickly ask you about the golf course itself. What is it about Augusta National that makes it so special? Is it because they go there every year and it's a major championship venue and all the history? Or is there just something spectacular about the golf course itself that sets it apart from anything else?
I think it's very different compared to most tour events because the greens are lightning quick. The breaks and subtle breaks on the course make it extremely difficult for landing the golf ball on the green. And then also, like, the wind, it's you see it every year, like Spieth, and judging the wind is just it's very difficult. So it's a test unlike any other.
Absolutely. So why don't we get into the tournament itself and the two big names that are pretty much every year since Tiger has kind of faded. It's Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, number one and number two in the world. We all know Scottie Scheffler. He's won two of the last three Masters. He had an all-time great year last year in 2024, won a boatload of times, won a gold medal, won the Masters. If it wasn't for that injury late in the year with his hand when he was making ravioli or something, he would probably have won two or three events. But he hasn't won this year. He had his best finish of the PGA Tour season last weekend in Houston. What are your expectations for Scottie Scheffler? Do you think he recaptures his Masters magic this week, or do you don't think he's 100% there yet?
I it's hard to bet it against number one golfer in the world. I think he's very relaxed. I think he played with his mom. He did a practice round yesterday with his mom, so shows that he's very relaxed. I think he's comfortable. And I mean, he's been in that position, and I think I'm gonna have to go with Scottie, honestly.
Yeah, it's Scott. He's unbelievable. His short game, and ever since he switched to the mallet putter, I know the putting hasn't been great this year, but it heated up last week in Houston. He's been unstoppable. His irons are unbelievable, and I know his swing is a bit uncharacteristic, but it works for him. Let's quickly get into Rory. We all know the storylines with Rory McIlroy. He needs this tournament to complete the career Grand Slam, would put him in the most exclusive club in the sport. And let's be honest, Cameron, he has never played as well or has as much wins going into the Masters as he does this year. He won at Pebble Beach, the first elevated event of the year. Then he won the Players, which is, the fifth major, they call it? So he has two monster wins heading into Augusta National. How do you see Rory performing this week going for the career Grand Slam yet again?
Oh, tough, Tommy. I know you don't want to hear this, but I think it's just a battle between himself. Like, he's in his head, and I think that's the problem. His swing's good and everything. I think he'll make a run. I don't think he's gonna miss the cut or anything. I think he'll give it a legit run, but I don't think he'll close it off this year.
I think Rory needs to be in a position like he was a few years ago. If you remember, he was, 10 back of Scottie on Sunday, and he shoots 64. He finished solo second. Everyone else crumbled. Cam Smith crumbled. A lot of guys fell back, except Scottie just played par golf and won the tournament. I feel like he needs something like that. He's a 5-6 back on the weekend, shoots a good round in the 60s, and then the leaders fall back a bit, so it's out of his control. I agree. If you could pick a guy from LIV, because let's be honest, I don't know many people who follow the LIV Tour. They have big names. They have Rahm, they have DeChambeau, they have Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Sergio's playing okay. They have big names on the tour, but it's not like the PGA Tour. We have no idea who's playing well coming in. If there's a LIV guy to watch out for this weekend, who do you like?
Probably going to go with Bryson. I think he strives under pressure, and with all the camera and media attention that he's going to get from this week, I think it's hard not to go with him. So I'm gonna go with Bryson. I was also thinking of Joachim Niemann, but I think he'll play pretty well.
What about John Rahm? He won the Masters 2 years ago. Then he pretty much just hasn't won a tournament since, if we're being honest. He had that great start to 2023, won the Masters. Then he had an okay rest of the year. Then he goes to LIV. And then last year, no one was talking about his great Masters win at 2024. They're all like, why'd you go to LIV? Why'd you make that decision? Now, a year removed, Everyone knows he's in LIV. Apparently, he's playing good golf. He's a past champion. How do you see John Rahm doing this weekend at Augusta National?
I'm tough to say, Tommy. I haven't watched any LIV events. I've seen posts of him going, having some super low rounds, but I think a factor is like they only play three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, walking and especially of how much the contour of the course, and it's pretty demanding. And I mean, that extra day I think is going to play a factor. I think he's not in his prime anymore. I think playing in LIV, you're not playing as much, and I don't know. It's tough to. I hope he does well, but personally, I don't think he's going to do that well.
And lastly, could you give a dark horse, maybe a name, not the Rorys, not the Scotties, maybe not even the Koepkas or those guys? Do you have like a name that people might not know of that can be high up on the leaderboard come Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, every year, same person, Patrick Cantlay.
Mm.
I think he's got it. He's he shapes the ball both ways, which is going to be crucial, especially if the wind picks up. Great putter, hard knock. You got to go with him. That's my pick, and it will be for the years to come.
So you like Patrick Cantlay to get the green jacket this year, the long shot? Yeah,
always.
Perfect. Thank you, Cameron. I appreciate it. Enjoy the golf. And if I don't know what Patrick Cantlay's odds are to win the green jacket, but Cameron's has great golf knowledge. So if you have a betting app or something, he's probably over 20-1. So I would look at that, right, Cam?
Yeah, I'll check it out. I'll let you know.
Perfect. So thank you, Cameron, for coming on, and enjoy the Masters this week.
Thanks, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
So that's Cameron Long, Concordia golfer. He's right. Patrick Cantlay putts the ball extremely well. He was in the hunt at the U.S. Open last year. He's won the Tour Championship a few years ago and the FedEx Cup. So he has the kind of game to play well at Augusta National. That's a good pick. I haven't heard a lot of Patrick Cantlay's. I've heard watch out for Justin Thomas. Watch out for maybe Akshay Bhatia. Those are like the long shots. Sepp Straka. Those are the long shots I'm hearing. Patrick Cantlay, that makes a lot of sense. That's a great pick. So the Masters tees up on Thursday. So we'll get into more of that later in the hour. Thank you, Cameron, for coming on. He was only available for 10, 15 minutes, but we wanted a guy who watches the tour exclusively to come on and talk to us. So we appreciate Cameron for doing that. So yeah, we mentioned Montreal. What a weekend for them. But despite the Canadians getting on a run, and despite Lane Hutson pretty much securing the Calder, this weekend, sorry, Montrealers, was all about Alexander Ovechkin. And the Capitals, firmly the number one team in the Metropolitan, they're going to have the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They are a great hockey team. But I find people are trying to come on them recently and say, hey, you know what? Maybe they're not as good as we thought they were. They haven't played their best hockey. My mentality is, hey, since they pretty much secured first place in the Metropolitan and the Eastern Conference, let's just try and get Ovi this goal record. And he got two on Friday, and he had the chance with an empty netter, but Ryan Leonard scored. I don't think Ovi wanted to score an empty netter to break Gretzky's record, which is understandable. But yesterday in New York, was watching the television, and history was made for Alexander Ovechkin.
But no, look, he's just trying to find the seam, and all that, I'm going to try to force it to him if he's open.
Here is Ovechkin, shoots, he scores! He scores! Number 895! Hockey League history.
So that was Alexander Ovechkin yesterday, the crowd going nuts on the road in New York against Ilya Sorokin and the Islanders. They end up losing the hockey game, but who cares? They had a great time after. Breaks Wayne Gretzky's record. Alexander Ovechkin, 895 career NHL goals. Just remarkable. And you'd like to think they can he can probably get to 900. They got a few games left. They got 5 games left. He can get to 900 before the year's done. He scored over 40 goals again, and he's 39 years old. Just a phenomenal year for the Capitals and Alexander Ovechkin. But yeah, they haven't been playing their best hockey recently. They got blown out by Buffalo, blown out by Carolina. They lost yesterday, but they're maybe a bit checked out of it, all based on Ovechkin getting the goal record. But they're cruising atop of the Metropolitan Division and the Atlantic. So they're just, we're so focused on getting Ovi that record, I think, and they may have cost them. I haven't been watching a ton of Capitals. I watched the game Friday and watched the game yesterday until Ovi scored. Then I checked out the baseball. But what an accomplishment for Alexander Ovechkin. And I wonder how they're going to respond now. They were so focused on getting him the record. Now they have to worry about a team like Ottawa or Montreal, maybe the Rangers, waiting for them in the first round. Ovi got the record. Congratulations. But now the Capitals have to turn their attention to getting ready for the postseason. And now we'll get back to Montreal, because the Canadiens, after that horrendous road trip, just shocking, they got blown out by St. Louis. Terrible performance against Philadelphia, terrible against Carolina, and they got the win against Florida, and then since then they haven't lost. They beat Florida twice, they beat the Bruins, they beat Philly, they beat Nashville, and if you remember last week on this show, I said the Canadiens can pretty much lock up a playoff spot if they get hot on this stretch. After they beat Florida last Sunday, we said here on the show, you play Florida well, you got Boston who stink, Philadelphia stinks, and Nashville stinks. If you win all those games, you're in a great spot. Or if you tie or you lose in overtime, against Florida and win the rest of the games, you should be fine. They went out, they got 8 points, and now they're in a very good spot, and they have a big week of hockey coming up. Detroit tomorrow at home, at Ottawa will be tough, at Toronto, Chicago at home, Carolina at home. So it's a weird stretch coming up for the Canadiens. They should beat Detroit. I like their chances there. Ottawa's playing great. Toronto's playing pretty well. Chicago are a mess. And then I said Carolina, I don't know how hard they're going to play. I think that's their second to last game of the year. They're pretty much, I don't know the math, but I think they're just the 2 seed at this point. So they shouldn't be going anywhere. So you might not get a full effort from them. So Montreal's in a good spot. If you beat Detroit, if you beat Chicago, that might be good enough for Montreal with 5 games left to go. So tomorrow night at the Bell Center, that will be rocking on a Tuesday night with a win against Detroit. That would just be phenomenal. Detroit not out of it, though. They win that hockey game. They have a game in hand. You can't count out Detroit. You can't. They've won 2 in a row. You can't do it. Yeah, I don't think he can. Ottawa's on a heater. They've won 3 in a row. And they're pretty, I'd say Ottawa is this close to clinching. I really do. And if you look at the standings, they're only 2 points back of Florida, who have lost 5 in a row. 5 in a row. I don't know if I think Marchand's won 1 game when being in the lineup. Now, I know they're putting in new pieces, and Seth Jones hasn't fit as well as they've hoped. But still, I don't think that matters. They have not been good at all. Obviously, I'm not going to freak out if I'm Florida. Kachuk's going to come back for the postseason. That's a huge, huge, huge piece of that roster. And I think Bobrovsky's going to turn it around. I really do. But 5 losses in a row, and it's not just the good teams. Like, what are we doing here? You're losing just games you have no business losing. Like the Islanders a few weeks ago, you can't lose that hockey game. Montreal twice, home and away, you got to win one of those hockey games. Ottawa, Detroit, Toronto, you got to win one of those hockey games. And now they're in a crazy spot. Maybe they want to play Toronto in the first round or just tanking. I don't know. Because Ottawa, 2 points back of Florida, is something to watch out for. I kind of selfishly want Ottawa-Toronto in the first round, Battle of Ontario. I think that'd be awesome. But at this rate, it's going to be Florida, Toronto again. Again, and they don't want that. We all remember 2 years ago what happened. We want Florida. We want Florida. Florida went up there and knocked them on the other side of the head. They beat them over the head with a bat. That was shocking from Toronto. The Bruins lose at the historic season. Oh, we want Florida. We want Florida. Florida beat them in five rather comfortably. And then Florida just went on that great run and haven't really looked back in the postseason. So we're going to see. We're going to see. The East is really up for grabs, in my opinion. There's no dominant team. We mentioned Washington. They're not a crazy dominant team. They have a great start to the year, but are playing 500 hockey coming down the stretch. Carolina doesn't impress me too much. They've lost two in a row. New Jersey, okay, but you don't have your superstar in Jack Hughes. Toronto's proven not to be a factor in the come postseason time. Tampa and Florida, yeah, they've had success, but Florida's reeling. And then you have Ottawa and Montreal. So to me, the East is completely up for grabs. It could be anyone. You get a hot goalie, you get on a goal-scoring stretch, and who knows what happens. That's not the case in the Western Conference. The Western Conference, you have some heavy, heavy hitters. You have Vegas, you have LA, you have Winnipeg, you have Dallas, you have Colorado. You have the St. Louis Blues, who have won 12 in a row. So the West, to me, is a different animal. Different animal. The weak link might be Minnesota. And Vegas, St. Louis would be a hell of a series. Because it looks right now, and there's still five games left, and Dallas is only 3 points back of Winnipeg, so you never know. But it looks right now Winnipeg's going to play Minnesota, and Vegas is going to get St. Louis. And Vegas is heating up as well. They're 8-2 in their last 10. LA's heating up. They're 8-2 in their last 10, have won four in a row. And the favorites coming into the year, the Edmonton Oilers, just can't stay healthy. Draisaitl out of the lineup. McDavid's been out. Stuart Skinner's been injured, so they've been relying on Pickard. How healthy is Evander Kane? Trent Frederick just came back from injury. He didn't look right. It's going to be interesting. Edmonton have the most talent up front, probably, in the National Hockey League. If you have Draisaitl, you have McDavid, you have Nugent Hopkins, you have all these guys, it's tough to stop, but they have not been healthy. And we know how inconsistent their goaltending can be. So the Western Conference, to me, is a different animal. Winnipeg, I know they've had bad postseason play in the past, but they're going to be tough to beat. Dallas has been on fire. Colorado have experience in the playoffs, and we see Landeskog skating with the team. Who knows? But they've won a cup with McKinnon, McCarr, and all those guys. St. Louis is the hottest team in the National Hockey League. Vegas is heating up at the right time, and they won a cup a few years ago. LA's heating up at the right time, and then you kind of have Edmonton and Minnesota. So the West, to me, is going to be a far, far, far tougher draw, in my opinion. You could have Minnesota and Winnipeg, Vegas, St. Louis, Dallas, Colorado, LA, Edmonton. Those are all phenomenal hockey series. I'm not taking a shot at the Eastern Conference, but I find the East is a bit, yeah, it'd be like Toronto, Ottawa would be cool. Tampa, Florida, rivalry, cool, but I don't think those teams are the same level as the West. I don't. And it'd be interesting, Montreal in the postseason, are we so focused on that? But Carolina, New Jersey, that doesn't do anything for me, really. Like, the Western Conference, every single series is unbelievable. Unbelievable. McKinnon and McCarr against Rantanen, their old teammate. Oh, that's a great storyline. You have Jim Montgomery and Bruce Cassidy, the two former Bruin coaches who were fired from their jobs, probably unjustifiably. Two great coaches with the Bruins, led them to historic seasons. They both get fired, and now they go to these new teams, and they've led them to the postseason. They now are the two hottest teams in hockey. They're on a collision course. That would be phenomenal. LA Edmonton for the 100th time. Can LA finally get past Edmonton? To me, like, those are all phenomenal, phenomenal storylines. And I think better hockey teams. That's the big point. You ask me, the five best teams in the NHL right now, I have to say Vegas, Winnipeg, Dallas, Colorado, And then, you know, you like to throw Toronto in there in the regular season. Okay. Washington regular season. Okay. But if you ask me in a seven-game series, are you taking Washington or L.A.? You're probably taking L.A. Or if I gave you Washington or Edmonton, that's a close call. If I gave you Washington or Vegas, you probably pick Vegas. Washington or Dallas, you probably pick Dallas. Colorado. But a lot of people are picking Colorado. How about St. Louis? They're the hottest team in the league, 12 in a row. So I'm saying the Western Conference has just unbelievable depth to it. And that's why I can't. I'm excited for the Eastern Conference, excited for the Canadiens, excited for Ottawa. Toronto's always a big storyline, and you could have the Battle of Florida. But to me, as a fan, I look at that Western Conference playoffs, and I get really excited because some of those matchups are unbelievable. Unbelievable. What's going to be interesting about the NBA is what the hell's going to happen once we get to the conference finals, in my opinion. Because the whole year in the NBA, we've been talking about Oklahoma City, been talking about Houston, talking about these teams, not the Golden States of the world, not the Lakers of the world. Those were storylines, of course, but not as true title contenders. But now the Lakers go out, and yesterday, I could not believe what I was watching. They went out there and totally annihilated the Oklahoma City Thunder. I was stunned. 126-99. The Lakers destroyed the Thunder on the road. And LeBron was okay. He had 19 points. Austin Reeves, 20 points. Good. Luka Doncic was a game changer. 37-6. Controlled the game. Was making behind-the-back passes. And the Thunder had no chance. And if the Lakers play like this, if their perimeter players and their bench players can score like Gabe Vincent, like Dorian Finney-Smith, like Rui Hachimura, if those guys can contribute hitting big shots from three, then the Lakers are going to be so tough to beat because they got three key scoring options. Three. Luka Doncic, LeBron James, and then this kid, Austin Reeves, who we've talked about a lot on this show, is having a career year. He's averaging 26-4. And he's efficient, too. The Lakers are going to be very tough to beat come the playoff time if they play like that. And in a league where this whole season we've been focused on the Clevelands, focused on the OKCs, the Rockets, the Timberwolves, the Grizzlies, everyone else but the Lakers, everyone else but the Celtics, everyone else but the Nuggets and the Warriors, we could have those teams playing again. And I don't want to knock OKC. They've had a phenomenal year. They're 64-14. The Rockets are 52-27. The Cavs are 62-16. You had great years. But there's something. I don't know what I'm... There's just something that fell off. Like, you know what? In the postseason time, I'm still trusting Luka and LeBron. In the playoffs, sorry, Cleveland, I'm going to trust Tatum, Brown, the Celtics. I'm just going to do it. And people can throw the defensive stats at me. People can throw Shai Gilgeous, Canadian, by the way, is a superstar on that level. I understand it. But I have not seen him, have not seen the Thunder, have not seen this version of the Rockets, have not seen the Cavs come postseason time prove that they can win an NBA championship. The Celtics have. Luka dragged the team to the final, and he has LeBron James as his running mate, who I think he's done pretty well in the playoffs. I've seen Jokic do it. I've seen Curry do it. I've seen Jimmy Butler do it. I've seen those players come playoff time, produce. And think about the players I mentioned who haven't won championships. Luka Doncic. He has LeBron James as his teammate and has been a killer in the playoffs. Jimmy Butler dragged the Heat twice to an NBA Finals with Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson and no elite players. An old Kyle Lowry. Now he's with Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Steve Kerr as the head coach. I like Golden State in the playoffs. Nikola Jokic, if you've missed, is putting up just Wilt Chamberlain-like numbers. and he's won an NBA title, and he's won three league MVPs. Sorry, NBA analytics fans. I trust those guys right now over in Oklahoma City and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, over Green and those guys in Houston. Ime Udoka is a great coach, but I haven't seen him do it. I haven't seen the Cavs do it. So, like, I'm sorry if I'm anti the three new teams. It's just I have not seen those franchises and these teams in particular. It's not like this was the first team this team was the first year these teams were thrown together. The Thunder were in the playoffs last year. You know? Like, and they lost in the second round. So it's not like I'm just being harsh. I've seen them lose in the postseason, and I've seen the players on these star teams who are a bit lower down in the standings have phenomenal postseason success. Phenomenal. Like, just unbelievable postseason success. Tommy, Luka never won a championship. Jimmy Butler won never won a championship. Okay. I think the Lakers, and I'm a Celtics guy. I hate doing this. And my Celtics are playing pretty good, by the way. They're 9-1 in their last 10. So they're heating up at the right time. But I'm telling you, it kills me as a Lakers fan. It kills me. Sorry, as a Celtics fan, to see the Lakers play like this. But I can't deny what I'm watching. They have looked phenomenal recently. And if they have LeBron and Luka, and they have a third option like Austin Reeves, and in their last five games, they've already beaten the Rockets. They embarrassed the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they get to play them again soon, I believe. On Tuesday, they get to play them again. So we'll see what happens again. But still, I loved what I saw from the Lakers. Absolutely loved it. And Luka's finally hitting shots. And if Luka Doncic is hitting his shots, and if you know basketball, you know how he shoots the ball, impossible shots. If he start hitting those, then the league is in deep, deep trouble. Deep, deep trouble. Here's LeBron James following just... I don't even know what to call it. It was one of the most dominant performance I've seen of a great team. I was excited for the game. I was looking forward to it. Said, here we go. I want to see the Lakers play against Oklahoma City. They've played well recently. And man, was I surprised. They looked fantastic. Fantastic. Here is LeBron post-game just from a dominant performance by the Lakers. Oh, sorry. Here we go.
You know, not letting up, even if you're at plus 20, you kind of knew that OKC could come back. Could you just take us through kind of your approach to that and keeping your teammates along the way?
Yeah, I mean, between them and Cleveland, they're the best teams in the NBA. So, they're the number one team in the West, and you can't have a let up no matter what the score is. They're always going to make a push, and that's why they are where they are at this position in this part of the season. So, you know, it was a really good game for us, and we can build off of it.
What do you think was the biggest reason you were generating such good looks from three, and then, you know, guys started to knock them down?
We just played with some pace. We got to where we wanted to get to offensively, and AR did what AR did, what he does every single night. You had two layups in a row. Oh, that's bogus. He blocked that one? Okay. I'll give you one. Second one was nasty. You know, AR does what AR do, man, and then obviously Luka was spectacular as well. But all around performance by everybody that came in the game tonight, it was a good win for us.
So that was LeBron James following the game. But you're right, if Austin Reeves plays like that and Luka Doncic plays like that, they're going to be so tough to beat. And I hate it as a Celtics fan. I hate it. We'll stay with basketball quickly before our first break. Sorry about the technical issues there. I don't know what happened there, but we're back. What a game that was down the stretch between Duke and Houston, the Final Four. Duke pretty much had that game won. The whole game, Houston was hanging around, but it felt like Duke was just the better basketball team. Cooper Flagg was putting on a show. Everyone was showing out for Duke. Then I don't know what the hell happened down that stretch. They had the bad turnover on the inbound, and they just kind of went from there, Houston. Just a phenomenal. I was watching the game Saturday night, losing my mind. Houston had no business winning that game at the end. None. And they come back. They play phenomenal defense. I couldn't believe on the inbounds, they were all over Duke, making it impossible to inbound the ball. They forced a turnover. It was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. And Duke will be kicking themselves. They had chances even when Houston came back in the game. They had the ball with just over, around 15 seconds left. And Cooper Flagg had a shot, a mid-range shot, which he loves to take the lead. With 3 seconds left, he didn't make it. So that's a crushing loss. That was a phenomenal team, a bunch of freshmen, and I know they're going to lose a lot of them to the NBA. That's a crushing loss. And in that other game, Florida, listen, they're just playing great basketball. It's just phenomenal what they're doing. And now they face Houston, which is going to be a great game. I've counted out Houston for a long time. I always saw them come up short in the tournament. I picked Florida to start the year, or start the March Madness, not the year. Start the tournament. I saw them in the SEC tournament. I saw them beat Tennessee. They had good success against Auburn. They had good success against Alabama. So I was rolling with them because the SEC was the best conference, and in my opinion, Florida was the best team. So I'm gonna roll with Florida tonight. Clayton, that guy is unbelievable. He hits big shots constantly. So I'm going to roll with the Gators tonight, but it's going to be a tough game. Cannot wait for that one. Houston and Florida for the national championship tonight. That's going to be a fantastic basketball game in San Antonio. So I can't wait for that one. When we come back, we have a lot to talk about. Obviously, the Montreal Canadiens making their playoff push. And we really have to talk about the Masters because it starts on Thursday. And what a day for the Blue Jays. They lose just a heartbreaking game. They had runners in scoring position the whole game. Could not get it done. But then it ended on a positive note as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. inks a monster 15-year deal. Close to $500 million on a 14-year deal. So a huge day for the Blue Jays. We will get into that after the break. My name is Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Feeling overwhelmed by the state of the world? You're not alone. Join Mosaic for How to Choose Between Apathy and Empathy in an Overwhelming World, a workshop designed to help you navigate burnout, cultivate compassion, and balance your mental and emotional well-being. Join us on April 11th at the Hall Building. For more info, visit our website at mosaic.org.
Ashes to Ashes is your home for modern pop in all of its forms, whether it be synth pop, hyper pop, ambient pop, or anything else ending in pop. Along with Bops, the show features interviews and performances from an always growing list of emerging and established pop artists from both the local Montreal music scene and abroad. So tune in at 7 p.m. every Tuesday on CJLO 1690 AM and CJLO.com.
Back here on Tommy John Show. So yeah, like we mentioned, a hectic weekend in Major League Baseball. And I don't know what it is about this year. Could be the torpedo bats. Could be a whole bunch of things. But my goodness, what a first few weeks of the season we've had. Or I guess just 1 week, actually. Just phenomenal. We had the Yankees get off to a hot start. We had the Red Sox forgetting how the score runs. We had the Blue Jays getting off to a hot start. And how things have changed in a week. Because I ranted on the Tommy John Show Instagram. You can check that out, at the Tommy John Show. About my Red Sox not being able to score. And then in their doubleheader yesterday, not only did they need two runs to tie the game in the ninth, and they did that to win the first one 5-4. And the Cardinals will be kicking themselves for losing that one. They played again on Sunday night. They scored 18 runs and win 18-7. And ever since I ranted after they lost 8-5 to Baltimore on Monday, so I ranted here how they should have at least split that series with the Texas Rangers to start the year. They went off after the show and put a pathetic performance against Baltimore, and I was concerned because Devers was 0-for-19. Tristan Casas couldn't hit anything. Trevor Story couldn't do anything. And then they have not lost since, ladies and gentlemen. They heard my message. Clearly, someone showed them my message in the clubhouse. Because since then, they have been phenomenal. They won the next two games against Baltimore to win the series. Then they sweep the St. Louis Cardinals to open the year at Fenway. And now they have a nice four-game series starting tonight against the Toronto Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays, as great as a weekend the Red Sox had, the Blue Jays had the opposite. Because a week ago, the Blue Jays were 5-2, first in the American League East, just swept the Nationals, and were looking to really put some... I know it's the first week of the year, but they could have had a nice little 2.5, three-game lead over the rest of the American League East, and they went to Citi Field in New York and got swept by the Mets. And the Saturday one's going to hurt, because they were up 2-0 in that ballgame, and they could not get a break to save their lives. They were finally chewing away outs in that inning. And then I forget who the pitcher was. I think Bassett started the game and he was phenomenal. And then later in that baseball game, they let it all get away from them. And then in the ninth inning, they had runners in scoring position. The bases might have been loaded as well. And they could not knock the runs in. And then what happens in the bottom of the ninth? The Mets go and win the baseball game. Bassett was great. Yimi Garcia. Brandon Little. Brandon Little. Thank you. That was going to kill me. Brandon Little was just shocking. They needed outs. They're in a bit of a jam, and they couldn't get out of it. So that was a bad loss for the Blue Jays. And they got a huge series with the Red Sox because the Red Sox are on fire. They cannot miss. Alex Bregman has been phenomenal since coming to Fenway Park. He struggled a bit to open the year, but new situation, new everything. He's been fantastic. And the Red Sox pitching, I got to give him credit. Garrett Crochet, he signed that huge contract. It looks like it's going to be a good one. They signed Christian Campbell, the second baseman, this week. That's going to be a good player for the Red Sox for years to come. At only $60 million for 8 years. That's a great deal for the Red Sox. It looks like right now. But even if he's just an average MLB player, $7.5 million. I'll take that every day. But the Blue Jays, they had just a horrendous road trip. Things were kind of down, but now things are bright again in Toronto because Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a 14-year, $500 million deal. Excuse me. 14-year, $500 million for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I can't believe it took this long. They were offering their money to every other superstar not named Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani. Please take our money. Please take our money. And is he as good as Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani? No, he is not. But he's still, in my opinion, probably the best first baseman in all of baseball. If you take in hitting and defensive play, he's fantastic. He hit .323 last year, over 30 home runs, over 100 RBIs. In an awful year for the Blue Jays, the one consistency was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. being awesome in every night. Night in, night out, Guerrero was fantastic. And if you go to a Blue Jays game in Toronto, or if you look around this country, if you see someone wearing a Blue Jays jersey, 90% of the time is going to have 27 Guerrero Jr. on the back. You maybe see a Bo Bichette jersey here and there, but 95% of the time, it has Guerrero Jr. on the back. And that counts for something. He is a superstar in Toronto and in Canada. His dad's a legend with the Expos. He was the number one prospect in baseball coming up. Everyone heard about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when he was lighting it up in AA, lighting it up for Buffalo in AAA. And then he had the huge nationally televised game when he came, when he made his MLB debut. And he almost won the MVP in his second year in the league, and he's just been phenomenal ever since. He's a four-time All-Star already. He's 26. And now he signs this 14-year deal, $500 million, and he is going to be a Toronto Blue Jay for life. And he's star power, man. Guerrero is box office. He's a superstar in Toronto. They had to do it. If they let Guerrero walk and he goes to the Red Sox, he goes to the Yankees, goes to the Mets, the Phillies, the Dodgers, That could have been the end for the Blue Jays for a long time. Now, I know $500 million sounds like a lot, and it is, but it's a going rate in baseball, and now the Blue Jays, for the next, I guess the contract starts next year, for the next 15 years, 15 seasons, will have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in their lineup. And that means something, because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. puts people in seats in Toronto. He does. And now you can build around the team. No matter what, you're going to have Guerrero Jr. at first base for 14 years. Now you can build a good team around that. You know he's locked in. Now the next thing is, do we want Bo Bichette locked in at shortstop? And then you go from there. But you're going to have Springer's contract coming off the book soon. You locked in Kirk. You still have a few years left of Gausman and Chris Bassett. So a lot of these great players the Blue Jays have are locked into contract. And you're going to shed some salary in no time. Because George Springer's deal is coming up. And then I believe, and they have a few other guys' deals coming up as well. But you look at the Blue Jays roster. Guerrero's locked in. Santander's locked in. They just signed this offseason. Alejandro Kirk's locked in. Gausman, Chris Bassett, Berrios signed a few years ago. So their key players are locked in. The one that's missing is Bo Bichette, and we'll see if a deal gets done. But I love this deal for Toronto. They had to do it. Is it an overpay? Maybe. But there's superstars are not lining up to sign with the Blue Jays. Ask Ohtani. Ask Soto. The Blue Jays are offering them obscene money. And know what the Blue Jays were used for? Negotiation with the Dodgers. Negotiation with the Mets and the Yankees. That's what the Blue Jays have been used for. So what do you have in Toronto already? You already have a superstar at first base in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Sign him. Make sure he stays with Toronto for the rest of his career. And they have done that. They have done that. So at least there's some good news coming from Toronto. The season, I was surprised. They had a good, I thought the Orioles were a great team. They had a hard-fought split to start the year. Then they go and sweep the Nationals 5-2 going into New York. And as bad as that series was, and how there was two games there on Saturday and Sunday that were there for you to win and you lose, you're still, it's the first month of the year. You're 5-5. Okay, but now you have some positivity in the room. You just extended Guerrero for 14 years at $500 million. So there should be some life in the room. As a Red Sox fan, I'm a bit nervous. I think the Jays come out and play well tonight. But the schedule makers did not do the Blue Jays any favors to start the year. Baltimore, the Mets, then we'll give you the Red Sox. And then, oh, wait, here comes this team called the Orioles again. And then the Braves, and then the Mariners, and then the Astros, the Yankees, the Red Sox again, Cleveland. And then later in the year, you get some teams you can beat. But the Braves, you know, they're a 1-6 or 1-7 baseball, 1-8, sorry, baseball team. They're much better than that, I think. I could be wrong, and it could be just an absolute disaster. But they got handed a brutal start to the year by the schedule makers, the Padres and the Dodgers. Padres for 4 games, Dodgers for 3, and then they just split a 2-game set with the Marlins. So this is a big series for the Braves coming up against the Phillies. Man, they're really not getting any scheduling breaks right now. There's no Rockies, there's no Pirates on this schedule for the foreseeable future. We'll quickly go through the standings. You have the Yankees 6-3. They had an up and down series with the Pirates. They lost yesterday. Yeah, 5-4. They won the first two games in the series. They had an up and down series with Arizona, but they're still fine. 6-3, half game up on the Red Sox, who have won 5 in a row, who host the Blue Jays for the next 4 games. The Tampa Bay Rays at 4-5, the Orioles at 4-6. Quickly to the American League Central, it is the Tigers at 5-4 with a 1-game lead over the Kansas City Royals. The Texas Rangers, what a start to the year for them. They are 8-2 and have a game and a half lead over the Los Angeles Angels, who sit at 6-3. Quickly to the National League, the Phillies 7-2. The Mets, coming off a sweep of the Blue Jays, are 6-3. We mentioned the Braves in last place at 1-8. Quickly to the Central, that's the Chicago Cubs, 7-5 lead the way. They have a 1-game lead on the Milwaukee Brewers. The St. Louis Cardinals, tough start to the year for them. They are 4-5, just getting swept on the road at Fenway this weekend. And then we get to the National League East, West, and that might be the greatest division of all time. The Giants 8-1, Dodgers 9-2, Padres 8-2. The Diamondbacks are 5-5, and they are a playoff caliber team. Then you have the Rockies. But you have three teams right now who are playing 800 baseball. Giants 8-1, Dodgers 9-2, Padres 8-2. And like we said, the Diamondbacks took a few games from the Yankees last weekend. They're a talented team. They're in the World Series 2 years ago. So watch out. We're going to see a lot from the Giants this weekend. They're in New York to take on the Yankees. But yeah, they are playing phenomenal baseball. Phenomenal. And the Dodgers, listen, that 9-2, they had a tough series against the Phillies, but still, it's going to be tough for anyone to beat them. But remember, a few years ago, the Giants won 100-something games and took the NL West from the Dodgers. So anything's possible. And the Padres, man, have played the Dodgers tough for the last few years and had them on the ropes last year. So I know the Dodgers have a super team. It's going to be impossible for them to lose. But in their division alone, they have two teams that match up well with them and are playing phenomenal baseball. Phenomenal. So we're only around 10, 11 games into the Major League Baseball season, and things are already starting to heat up. So congrats to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You're a very rich man, my friend. What a 14-year, $500 million deal. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back. I'll give you my Masters pick and as well as give you what I think the Canadians are going to do over the next week. My name is Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Hi, I'm Sydney Sheedy.
And I'm Piper Curtis.
We're the producers of Discordia, a 10-part audio docuseries for CJLO 1690 AM, funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada Radio Meters Program.
Tune in on Monday, April 7th at 6 p.m. for the 9th episode of Discordia, wherein we discuss the current state of organizing against Quebec tuition hikes announced in 2023.
Hey man, what are you listening to? Is this Weezer? Are you really listening to Weezer right now? It's 2021, bro. Pull up to the castle every Friday at 1, only on CJLO 1690. It's good, I swear.
Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Yes, we are in Augusta, Georgia this weekend, my goodness. Cannot believe we are finally here. It is the Masters teeing off on Thursday. We had Cameron Long earlier in the hour. Thank you, Cameron, giving us his Masters picks. He likes Patrick Cantlay, and he likes Scheffler to do well coming off the injury, despite him not playing well. But thank, appreciate Cameron. Hell of a golfer. Concordia member for the past few years on the golf team. They play against Laval, McGill, all those schools, and they did pretty well this year. So thanks, Cameron, for coming on. I appreciate it. So yeah, you look at the Masters odds. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler, the favorite at plus 450. Rory McIlroy at plus 650. Then there's definitely a drop-off. You have Rahm at plus 1400. Colin Morikawa, who's had a decent run-up. He just can't close, but he's always been in the hunt. He's at plus 1600. A player I'm definitely going to watch out for, Ludvig Åberg from Sweden. Remember, had a great tournament last year. I think he was second or third. He's at plus 1600. Xander Schauffele, who won two majors last year, people forget. But he's been battling, I believe, a rib injury. He won the PGA last year, won the Open Championship last year. He's at plus 1,800. Then the U.S. Open champion from last year, Bryson DeChambeau at plus 2,000. Justin Thomas, plus 2,200. So those are the main favorites. I'm a homer. When I say homer, I've been picking Rory to win the Masters since 2012, 2013. And his game is perfect for Augusta National. You need to be able to hit the ball a mile, which he does. No one hits it as far as him. And you need to be able to hit some draws. Who hits draws better than Rory McIlroy? I don't understand this. The one thing that has let him down in past Masters, obviously, is the mental side of it. Everyone's expectations, the weight of the world's on his shoulders to win the Masters and to join that elite club, the Career Grand Slam, which holds the likes of Tiger, Jack, Gary Player, Ben Hogan, Sarazen, just the elite players of the game that Rory is trying to join. Be the first European player to do it as well. He would immediately become a legend of the game if he were to win the Masters. And trust me, he thinks about it all the time. So mentally, that's on him. But another thing, his short game has let him down. He's not the greatest putter. I think his bunker game's elite, but sometimes his short game has let him down. That's not the case anymore. This year, his putting's been great. It bailed him out at Sawgrass. His short game was phenomenal. It bailed him out at Sawgrass because, let's be honest, when he won the Players a few weeks ago, his driving was not Rory McIlroy's standards. It looked a hell of a lot better in Houston, which gives me confidence. He said he took some loft off the ball, loft off his driver, and he said that did wonders for him, and his driver feels better because the driver of Rory McIlroy is the number one weapon in all of golf. No one has been able to hit the ball as far and as straight as Rory McIlroy. And yes, Scheffler scares me. I don't know anything about the LIV guys. I haven't really watched. I know Sergio Garcia is playing pretty well. He's a past champion, so maybe he makes a run on the weekend. John Rahm, who knows? That's why I love Ludvig Åberg at 16-1. I think that's a good bet. And Justin Thomas is playing well, but he hasn't closed, and he is having a left miss with the driver. Killed him in the Valspar in the last three holes. I like Shane Lowry at 35-1. Think he can make a run. And then what Brooks Koepka are we going to get? Because Koepka has shown he can go low at Augusta. He could have won in 2019, 2023. Remember, he came out and shot 65. He was in the last group with a two- or three-shot lead against Rahm. Ended up losing. So he can definitely be in the mix. There's a lot of good players that can win, from the Tommy Fleetwood crew to the Seb Straka, the Akshay Bhatia, those guys. But if you're looking at the top five names or so, I'm going to go with Rory McIlroy just because I've been doing it every year. And why not? Let's just keep doing it until he does it. He will do it. He's too talented. And one of those years, a break's going to go his way and he's going to win a green jacket. But he has not played as well as he has in his life going into the Masters and he has this year. He's never had as many wins to start the year as he has this year. And it's not like he won the American Express and the Century or the Sony Open. No, he won the two biggest events prior to the Masters. Pebble Beach, the elevated event, he won going away, and the Players, which is dubbed the fifth major, he won with his C-plus, B-minus game. And he looked good the last three rounds in Houston. I'm sorry. I'm going to roll with Rory McIlroy and see what happens. If you want a Canadian, I like Corey Connors. He always plays well at Augusta. So look out for Corey Connors if you want to follow a Canadian. I think he'll play well. Quickly on the Canadians, for the 100th time, I'll say it. This weekend should get them into the playoffs. It should. They have winnable games, big rivalry games. They have Detroit. They have Ottawa. They have Toronto. That's a tough stretch. But then you get to Chicago's and Carolina. And if Montreal win two of those games, I think they get in. But I think they win a bit more. I think they win tomorrow against Detroit. I think they beat Chicago on Monday. And I think they beat Carolina on Wednesday and they're going to the playoffs. And who will they face? It'll probably be Washington, and then you get the Grade 8 in Montreal, and that should be a fun series. But right now, Montreal, Dobesh played. They didn't have their stuff yesterday. It was a back-to-back, played in Montreal on Saturday and had to fly down to Nashville to play the Predators, and Dobesh helped them win that hockey game. He was superb. Lane Hudson breaking the rookie record for assists. He's been phenomenal. A lot of things going well for the Canadiens, so big game tomorrow night, and then Friday and Saturday against the two Ontario teams. It should be fun. Thank you guys for listening. We're back next Monday where we'll recap the Masters and we'll see where the Canadians lie in the postseason race. My name is Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next Monday.
Big Red Cherry knows who left this way.